So we are wrapping up a record-breaking week. I'm talking new cases and hospitalizations. We had the governor's coronavirus task force briefing on Tuesday, and I think we were all expecting an announcement about new restrictions, which didn't happen.
I'm surprised that we're not starting to hear about pullbacks on restrictions, but I wouldn't be surprised to see them come, just because things are starting to look bad. You know, this week they rolled out this new map. And the map shows red, orange, yellow for counties and how badly affected they are right now. It's a county alert system. And I will say this, looking at this map, there are a handful of counties that are red, meaning that they've got a high positivity rate, they've got a high case rate. But the thing that they also note on here is the hospital impact. So right now, hospitals are not really overloaded. They talk about low, moderate, and high impact. There are two counties that have high impact. One is Gaston County, and then the other county with high impact on their hospitals is Wilson County. So that is the thing that I think is really troubling to a lot of people, is that our case rates are going up. We saw 4,300 people on Thursday. Our positivity rate is creeping up. The death rate is still kind of holding steady, but it is steady. It's steady. And we're now bumping up against 5,000 deaths. So that's a lot of people who've died. But they're holding back on closing things down again.
Yeah. And I remember the governor noting a number of times corona fatigue. People, they're just tired of it. And then there's the compliance challenge.
You know, it makes me wonder, like, if you close things down, would people even listen? You know, I've been getting emails now from people who tell me, I went into a store in Robeson County and no one was wearing a mask. I went into a restaurant, you know, so-and-so, and no one was wearing a mask. I went into a gas station and no one was wearing a mask. So there's a lot still of folks who are not willing to get behind the mask, as Secretary Cohen says. And that is, I think, continuing to drive the cases. And as we know, next week is Thanksgiving. Like, you know, as you know, Helen, my husband and I we're out at the beach and we rented a little house and the place is deserted. There's no one around us. We're sequestering. We are not seeing anybody, because when we go home, we're going to have Thanksgiving with his elderly parents, my husband's elderly parents. And so we want to be sure that we're not going to give them anything. We are talking about my husband's sister, who is a healthcare worker, and we're a little bit like, are we going to put her out on the porch? it's really concerning. And you might have seen that we had these stories about, you know, how to keep COVID out of nursing homes. And one of the factors that promotes COVID getting into nursing homes is when there is a high rate of community transmission.
Yeah, definitely connecting the dots there. And one of the take-home messages was facilities had to figure out how to stay one step ahead of the virus.
Correct. And, you know, making wide use of PPE, getting ahead of things, teaching staff members what to do, what not to do. You know, there's been some really important research on staffing. So there was a study in Health Affairs that found that nursing homes with a staff that had a labor union, they died at a 30% lower rate than residents of non-unionized facilities. And there's a big association between lower staffing and the quality of resident care in nursing homes. You know, and it's interesting, just yesterday after we finished editing, I only saw this. It's a piece of research done actually by a friend of mine out in California that found that beyond COVID deaths, nursing homes that had worse staffing also had more non-COVID deaths from failure to thrive, people who lost weight, people who weren't getting their other things treated because the nursing home was kind of overwhelmed by COVID. So these are things, you know, staffing. Like, so if, you know, you're going out and you're going to place your loved one in a nursing home, I think the very first thing you do is you get on the Nursing Home Compare website, and there are ways to look at what a nursing home staffing is. And then, of course, there's testing and, you know, just good basic nursing practice in these facilities. So we were able to look at what nursing homes have done right.
So I want to talk about staffing, and this includes nursing homes, but I want to focus on hospital staffing because we hear lots of concerns all over the news about the lack of adequate staffing and how that might get worse. You are in regular contact with hospitals here in North Carolina. People on the floors, are they concerned? What are you hearing?
Yes. Yes. That was one of the things that these ICU heads talked to me about, is that they are worried about staffing. And I've been talking about this for the past, I don't know, I can't remember if I talked about it. I've been talking about this for the past couple weeks, that I've heard these ICU heads say, especially in rural places, they don't have the money to hire traveling nurses who now have expertise and are going from hotspot to hotspot to hotspot, really gleaning a lot of experience. And they can now ask for a premium. Can you blame them for going where the money is, right? So now they're going to, maybe they're going to El Paso and they're able to ask for a premium salary for the next 3 months, and more power to them. And then, but that means that these people are not available to, say, come to Wilson County, which has a high level of hospitalization in their patients, and they might not be able to staff up enough.
Okay, so let's stay in the hospital. I want to talk about your article looking at novel treatment protocols, sort of a lessons learned from the pandemic. And this focuses on respiratory support, flashback to spring when the big concern was lack of ventilators.
What was really interesting is that there's a respiratory condition known as adult respiratory distress syndrome, or ARDS. And, you know, ARDS patients, they are very sick. They end up in an ICU, they're on a ventilator, and then their lungs begin to catastrophically fail. And this is this thing that we've heard people talk about, this cytokine storm. That's part of ARDS, right? Well, it turns out that there's been a lot of research on ARDS over the past decade or two that has been applied now during COVID. Things like, we've heard about this proning, laying people face down on their stomachs for as much as like 16 hours a day, Helen. That's a long time. And, you know, things like using high flow oxygen, either by a mask or by what's called CPAP, which is a continuous pressure airway, you know, perfusion, that you wear a little mask and it pushes air into your nose. Rather than intubating people, because, you know, intubation's really hard on your lungs. So we're not really as worried about ventilators at this point in time right now. It's more about, you know, teaching ICU practitioners how to manage these folks better. And what's really interesting, also one of the folks that I spoke to said that one of the things that's really been positive has been the teamwork in ICUs, both at the individual hospital level. We talked to folks at Iredell Medical Center in Statesville, and they talked about using a team approach rather than having like one hospitalist, you know, really managing the patient, but getting everybody into the room to round on patients in the morning. So having this team approach, but also a team approach when it comes to the macro level. You know, we've learned about, for example, dexamethasone being highly effective for pretty sick patients with COVID, because all of these research centers around the country, they stopped competing and they started cooperating. And so they were able to do these large studies where you got a very big patient pool in record time. Like, you didn't have to wait 3 years to get enough patients. You know, they would have like 90 centers participating. Every place would have, 10 or 20 patients. And the next thing you know, you've got a study pool of 1,500 patients, and you can glean some really robust results when you have a patient pool that's that large. And the way they did it was by cooperating across centers. So that was really interesting to hear them say that.
All right. The clock always goes too fast while we're talking. We're going to wrap this up, but any final thoughts?
Next week is Thanksgiving, so keep it small.